The business news of the nation, region, and the greater Des Moines Metro made possible through the support of Creamer Law Firm. Business law and estate planning, visit creamerlaw.com. And AARP of Iowa, real possibilities for our community and our citizens, no matter the age, aarp.org.
Welcome back to the Monday edition of the Business News Hour. In studio with us, and I'm really looking forward to this conversation because I'll bet you there's some things about Shazam that you don't know anything about. I'll just bet you. Because I certainly didn't, and it's been around for a very long time. With us in studio, the name sounds familiar. If it does, it should, because Patrick Dix was for over two decades broadcast newscast guy. Welcome.
I was. Good Michael, to see you. Always good to see you. Thanks for having me.
What, your wife 2 weeks ago, and yeah. We get you now?
You get the Dixes in here. You know, the funny part about that is not many people connect Sally and I. So
really?
Yeah. So they meet her, and she is with Bravo
Sally
Greater
Dix,
Des Moines,
yeah.
And around town, and then they say, I had no idea the two of you were married until we show up somewhere.
Together.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then we go, oh, yeah, you guys.
Exactly.
Uh-huh. So how's, just before we get into Shazam, because this is an interesting story, I think, what's it like not having to get up at 3 o'clock in the morning?
2 o'clock in the morning. 17 years, most of it. Jeez. The alarm went off at 2 o'clock in the morning, and... you know, I loved it. I tell people I jumped out of bed for about 15 years.
Yeah.
And yeah. Then, you know, you start, it starts wearing on you a little bit. And I struggled. I did not want to move to just anything outside. I loved journalism. I loved TV news. And I just got so lucky finding Shazam and Shazam finding me.
Yeah.
I had some friends over there, and they said, why don't you come over? We don't have a public relations operation.
Yeah, it was a smart move.
Build it from the ground up.
There you go.
So.
And, you know, one of the things, just to stay on that tack for just a moment, so many of our compatriots that have been in the news business, in the industry, have been getting out and going to private enterprise.
Yeah.
You know, I'll have that conversation with you offline. But anyway, and lots for other reasons, because
right.
There's so many cuts in so many of the companies, and they're all corporately owned, and nobody's really making decisions on the ground, and yeah, mm-hmm. it's a little spooky.
As we need news and journalism most, we have come to a time when many newsrooms have cut as much as they can, because they are publicly traded companies.
Exactly.
Who serve their shareholders, not the communities that they're in. And so that that's not a system that's going to work for very long. I think we're going to have to see some private companies step back up and say, you know what, I'm going to own this yeah. radio group or TV station.
And that's in direct conflict with the FCC charter.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it is about the public interest and mm-hmm. serving the public good. Well, anyway. All right, let's talk about Shazam. We could
okay.
do this other thing all day long. Where is this at? And you guys have been around forever. Tell us this
more than
Shazam
4 decades.
Story.
Yeah, more than 4 decades. So right about the time that ATMs started coming out, the technology changed for banking. And what was happening was larger banks in bigger cities started deploying their ATMs and saying only our customers can use them. So if you were at a bank in Oskaloosa, you had a tiny little community bank that maybe had one branch, you might have had a couple of ATMs. But did your customers have access to their funds if they went to Chicago or they went to St. Louis? Iowa bankers recognized that, and they got together and they decided that their collective power would be greater. And they stepped in and they said, let's form a network. And the Shazam network was born. And so what they did was they had the ability through their numbers to say, we will work with you if you'll work with us. And that interoperability that gave their customers non-discriminatory access to their funds anywhere they were in the country was the reason that they decided to form Shazam ultimately.
Yeah, and I we all remember this. I mean, remember the ATMs that we would go to anywhere in the country and say, okay, there's going to be a $3 fee or whatever the fee was, you know, to get
or
your
you
money.
Or you couldn't use it. I
or
mean,
you
at
couldn't
first,
use
you
it.
Couldn't use it. Yeah.
Yeah. And how frustrating that
right.
was for everybody. So Iowans got together and did this?
Yes. Yeah.
See?
Iowa bankers got together and did it, and it really... It still stands as a unique example 4 decades later of the kind of interoperability that we need in the payment system. And that you know, it's funny because that same fight that we were fighting four decades ago is coming back as technology changes in the payments industry in the form of EMV and Apple Pay, tokenization, online, and so many other things that are coming that we haven't even seen yet.
Yeah. Patrick Dix, ladies and gentlemen, we're talking about the little startup that was based out of Johnston, right?
That's right. Originally in downtown Des Moines, and then we moved our corporate headquarters out to Johnston, 450 employees now.
So why the name Shazam? Is that because some magic happens when you put your card in?
Oh, I knew you were going to ask me this. It's an acronym.
Of course.
And it's out of Greek mythology. So it's Socrates, Hercules. I'm getting them wrong.
Those guys.
It's an acronym.
Got it.
So it does stand for something. It's funny. I have this argument all the time with journalists because they won't capitalize it. And I say, now wait, it's an acronym.
Yeah,
and
it's all capitalized.
They say, no, you just want your name capitalized because you want it to stand out more. No, it's really an acronym.
All right. So what? For 43 years, this has been going on. There's got to be changes in your system of what you're doing from then to now.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we can talk about ancient history, but let's fast forward to where we are today mm-hmm. with the payment system. How does all this work?
Well, it's funny because for 40 years, for 20 of the 40 years anyway, we really had when debit cards came out. Mm-hmm. So we had the ATM cards first, then we had debit cards that came out. The magnetic stripe on the back of your card, that was really the standard that the industry used. Everybody in the industry used it. It's interoperable. We use a PIN to authenticate the user mm-hmm. to make sure that the transaction is secure. It worked for a really long time. Then they figured out how to counterfeit cards. They figured out how to lift that information off of the mag stripe, and we needed something new. And
hence
so
the chip
card mm-hmm. came in. The problem with that is it is a good technology because it reduces fraud at the point of sale. So if you walk into a physical bricks and mortar store, that's where a chip is going to protect you. The problem with that is there are a couple of problems, but one, much of our commerce is moving online and there is not a fix for that. The chip does not help you online. So that is a problem we still have to fix. But the other problem with this, as in a lot of other technologies in our industry now, is it's proprietary. The chip is proprietary.
Who owns the chip?
So it's EMV is the name you hear for the chip. That's Europay, MasterCard, and Visa.
Mm-hmm.
Also, companies that own that are it's the major credit brands around the company. So China Union Pay, Japan has a big credit bureau, Europay, MasterCard, Visa, American Express. They all own the technology on that chip. So they deployed
it
in Europe.
Technology,
it's a major advantage. Yeah,
yeah,
and it's a major advantage for them because when they set the technology up, the chip directs the transaction. You insert the chip. That's got to go somewhere. Think of a railroad
mm-hmm.
from your local Quick Trip. It goes back to your bank for authorization, and then back to the Quick Trip to say yes, Michael's got enough money in his account. He can buy his soda. So, when the chip is inserted, original technology, it always goes on one of the large networks rails. That discluded the 18 competitive debit networks in the United States who also have a rail system and who also could give that merchant and that bank potentially a less expensive choice for that transaction.
Well, let's talk about expense for just a minute, because you and I had a conversation prior to this on the phone that really lasted an awfully long time, and I wish I had taken all kinds of copious notes on that. But when we talk about a debit or a credit transaction in the system, what is that? And I know merchants listening to this going, well, I'm paying 3.5% or 4% or 5%, you know, whatever the number is. And you go to Hy-Vee and you pay with cash, they'll give you 3% discount, whatever the numbers are. So tell us, break that cost factor down for us. And where does Shazam fit in?
So it's complicated.
Yeah, of course.
First of all.
And every like healthcare?
And every transaction can be different. Remember, credit is different than debit.
Mm-hmm.
So credit might cost a merchant something different than debit does. But the cost in there is interchange. And interchange is the fee that the merchant pays back to the bank for the use of that card so that they can have access to the funds, basically, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that can range broadly. For us, and again, it's not every single time, but for us, we generally say it's a penny. That's what we do. It's a penny. But that could go up and the fees that could be charged as a result of depending on how that transaction is routed, who touches it and why. All of those things could add cost. And it is usually only pennies or fractions of pennies, mm-hmm. depending on where you are. If you're Walmart, say, for instance, the volume of transactions that you use every day mean that you can negotiate prices that are at a fraction of the
local jewelry store.
It's volume, you know. Right. I mean, and so obviously you have some negotiating power. So it depends is the answer. And that is a really good answer for almost any question in payments. But for us, our job, because we are owned by community banks and credit unions, is to keep their costs as low as possible. When they win, we win. And that is what makes us unique in this industry. Almost everyone else in our industry is a publicly traded company that is beholden to their shareholders.
And
as they should be. You know, they're publicly traded. That's the way it goes.
That's why you invest in things.
Right.
All right. So to break this down even further, if I am buying something, whatever that something happens to be, I'm not a consumer. I own something.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So I own a flower shop,
yep.
let's say. And I don't want to be paying high percentages on these transaction fees. Is there a way to lower my transaction fee? And how would I do that?
Choice and flexibility are the two ways that you lower your fees. Competition is the way that you lower your fees, as in any business. The problem, going back to what we just talked about, is that the technology more and more is proprietary. And so when you have control over the technology, when you have a very large influence on the market, we believe that's where the U.S. payment system is going right now with the largest brands. And we believe that there should be someone, the industry as a whole, should get together and say, you know what, we have some basic standards. And the standard is, if you're a merchant, you can direct your transactions wherever you want them to go, whoever serves you the best, whatever your choice is. You choose the most expensive, feel free. That's your choice. But you shouldn't, the choice should not be dictated to you based on a large player with large volume.
And how does that get done, Patrick? We're talking with Patrick Dix, ladies and gentlemen, from Shazam. How does that get done? I mean, how do you make those adjustments?
Slowly. We have partners all across the country. Shazam's a national company. And all across the country, we are going to our state banking associations and making this case to them that payments should be interoperable. They should be based on choice and flexibility, that it should be the merchant and the bank's or the credit union's choice of who they partner with. We want to make sure that those are the base standards, okay? And that everyone is transparent about their fees and the cost of the transaction, and that banks and merchants can move around so that they get the best deal all the time.
Well, this is almost a David and Goliath story, isn't it, so to speak? I mean, is there any opportunity that banks will actually get together and say, you know what, all right, let's go ahead and level the playing field and give choice to the business to make their choice where they want to go?
It is difficult because
whereas
20 years ago, the majority of assets in banks were held by they were still held by the big banks. It was much closer to a 50-50 split. Now, something like 92 or 93% of all the assets in a bank are held by the largest banks in the country.
Handful.
Very small handful of banks. There are still a few thousand banks, community banks around
right.
the country. They hold a fraction of the assets, but they are in a majority of the communities, and that's what makes them powerful. The credit unions are the same way. They both can go up to Capitol Hill and have an enormous amount of influence. Community bankers are some of the most dedicated people to their communities, credit unions to their members, and so they have an enormous amount of influence on the voters, and don't underestimate that.
And, you know, one of the things that consumers are catching on to, I mean, we just had another story today about Wells Fargo. Another class action suit was filed yesterday with fraudulent and racketeering case. I mean, these things are stunning. And I think consumers are starting to sit back and listen to this and think, you know, I know Joe that has the bank downtown in Red Oak or wherever, Montgomery State Bank, for example, and I can go to them And somebody I know is actually making decisions on my loan portfolio, on some of my investment opportunities, and that's comforting for people.
It's interesting because I talk to community bankers and members and directors of credit unions all over the country, and what they tell you is, come on in, I will introduce you to the person that's making the decision on your loan. I will introduce you to the person who's going to open your account. I am positive that there are many thousands of really honorable, really good people that work for big banks. And so those people shouldn't be disparaged. But when it gets that big and when you are driven by the numbers at such a scale, it begins to get difficult to have the personal impact mm-hmm. that a community bank or credit union does in their community. These guys and gals are incredibly dedicated to their communities. They make loans to small businesses. They make sure you and I have a loan for our houses. It really is. They're dedicated. And without them, we would be in a bad place in this country.
Patrick Dix, ladies and gentlemen, we're talking about Shazam. Okay, so you mentioned earlier that Shazam is owned by community banks and credit unions. Mm-hmm. How does that work?
They are members.
Ah.
And so you sign up. You become a member.
So is Shazam a not-for-profit?
We are a not-for-profit, not a non-profit,
but a
not-for-profit. And so we
but
are
you may make a profit.
For-profit companies under a not-for-profit shell. I'm not a lawyer, and I don't understand Iowa law that well, but that's the way we are based here in the state of Iowa. And one of the advantages for us in the marketplace is that we serve, truly serve, our board of directors, who are community banks and credit unions. If we win, they win.
What a great story. And one of the things, and thank goodness Shazam's hired you to do this now, because I don't know who knows this stuff. You know, this is just the payment system alone. That whole thing can get very complicated. But the fact that this is a company with deep Iowa roots in various communities all over the state, mm-hmm.
All over the country now.
Yeah, now. And you look at your card and it says Shazam on the back. Mm-hmm. You go, wow, this is something out of New York or Pennsylvania or...
If you grew up in Iowa, you had a Shazam card
right.
first.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't have an ATM card. You had a Shazam card, and you
Absolutely.
Called it a Shazam machine.
Right. I remember. That's what the machines were. They had Shazam on the side of them.
Right. They weren't ATMs. They were Shazam machines. So we are very proud of our Iowa roots. We are very deeply rooted in this community. We were very quiet for a lot of reasons over those first 40 years, many of them having to do with security. We just wanted to be under the covers, sure. so to speak, and not draw a lot of attention. That's not the way the world works anymore, and it's time for us to get out and tell our story a little bit, in part because of what we were talking about before. There are influences on our industry right now that we think are we have some concerns about moving forward, and that is that proprietary technology. We think that technology should be interoperable, that consumers should have non-discriminatory access to their funds. It should not be based on whether you are with the biggest company. It should be based on your choice. And then when you make that choice, you should have access, no matter what technology you're using to access your funds, whether it's your phone, your chip card, your watch, whatever it is, you should have access to your funds through your debit account.
And you know, as you indicated earlier, all of this technology is moving at a very rapid pace. And as you indicated as well, online shopping doesn't have those protections built in it.
Not right now, but there are companies that are coming out. Interesting. First Data out of Omaha just bought a company that came up with, it's essentially a floating pin pad for your computer. So you buy something online, a pin pad pops up. If the first number of your ATM pin is a 4, you hit the 4 and the pad re-scrambles. So it's much harder Ooh. For someone to hack that based on the technology. So there are innovations coming around, and that, you know, that's the interesting part of this. A lot of people will say when standards come, that innovation fails. We think just the opposite. When you have mm-hmm. a good base standard, we think innovation flourishes. And our example is, you know, cold's been on the right and hot's been on the left for a really long time. If you've ever been to a Home Depot and looked at the number of choices of faucets you have, they're innovating just fine. And Kohler and Price Pfister and American Standard, they're all doing just fine, innovating on top of a standard. customer service and innovation for their customers, they do just fine. And we think payments can be the same way.
Good stuff. Patrick Dix, Shazam, thank you very much for doing this, man.
Always a pleasure. I want to
come back and do that. Yeah.
I want to come back.
Yeah, see, this is easy. Bring your wife next time.
That's right.
We'll talk about Bravo and, you know, what it's like to be able to sleep in.
We should.
All right. Patrick Dix, ladies and gentlemen. We've got to step aside. Why? Because we've got to find out what happened today on Wall Street. I can tell you it was a mixed bag today. Tesla stock went down, of course, after Elon Musk said the construction of the new version 3, it's going to be a manufacturing hell. That's what he said. And the investors took it out on him today. We'll have those stories and more when we come back on the Business News Hour.